From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us as we take you beyond the headlines to hear directly from our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all in the pursuit of truth on the issues that matter most to you and your family. And it all comes from a biblical worldview. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, and Washington Watch starts now.
We have to fight back, and we will, with everything in our arsenal. But we do that within the confines of the rule of law. We believe in our institutions. We are conservatives, and we are trying to conserve the greatest country in the history of the world, and its institutions are an important part of that. Our system of justice is an important part of that. So what we'll do with our tools that we have in Congress, in the House, is we'll use our oversight responsibility.
That was House Speaker Mike Johnson on Fox News Sunday stating that the House will be accelerating its efforts to expose and counter how the left has weaponized the government and the courts after former President Donald Trump's conviction by a Manhattan court for falsifying business documents. We'll get the latest from Ohio Congressman Warren Davidson in just a moment. Well, in the 11th hour, the WHO's World Health Assembly approved dozens of controversial amendments to the international health regulations, but could not advance the sought-after pandemic treaty.
Although the pandemic agreement has not yet been finalized, the Health Assembly has charted the way forward. It has agreed to extend the mandate of the Intergovernmental Negotiating Body to finalize negotiations on the pandemic agreement as soon as possible, and by next year's World Health Assembly at the latest.
That was WHO Director General Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus on Saturday. That tells us our work is far from over. Travis Weber was there in Geneva, and he joins us with a report on the 77th Annual Assembly. As we start the month of June, when the rainbow flags are flying, Promise Keepers launched a proclamation of godly masculinity. The statement, based on Scripture, outlines 10 specific responsibilities of a godly man. Our friends David and Jason Benham participated in the launch, and David's going to join me later here on Washington Watch. And finally, how should we as Christians, followers of Christ, respond to the lawlessness and the weaponizing of government, which all is designed to intimidate and silence political opponents? It might be different than you think. This is a very important question. If we get it wrong, we could further undermine our republic, which rests on the rule of law. Dr. Albert Mohler, president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, will join me for that important conversation. You won't want to miss it. The website is tonyperkins.com. Lots of resources there for you. But I have something else. Be sure and download the new interactive Stand Firm app. To find out more, text APP to 67742. That's APP to 67742. Or you can go to the App Store and download the Stand Firm app today. Be sure and rate it with 5 stars once you do download it so that others will see it. Let me tell you, this is a major step forward in the fight against the cancel culture. So help us win that battle. Download the Stand Firm app today. The guilty verdict delivered last week following Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg's pursuit of former President Donald Trump is part of a pattern of the left weaponizing the government and the legal system against their political opponents. This is about more than former President Trump. Now, for those who wanted to say you're trying to protect the former president, no. We've seen a pattern that has emerged, a number of examples. Federal government targeting pro-life activists. Parents being targeted by the DOJ at school board meetings for speaking out against indoctrination of their children. Religious organizations, even the Catholic Church, being monitored by the government. So how should the Republicans in Congress respond? Joining me now to discuss this, Congressman Warren Davidson. He serves on the House Select Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government. He also serves on the House Foreign Affairs Committee. He represents the 8th Congressional District of Ohio. Congressman Davidson, welcome back to the program. Always great to see you.
Definitely an honor. Thanks for having me on tonight, Tony.
So no state prosecutor has ever used federal election laws to make a state-level criminal case against a political opponent. How far was the law twisted in pursuit of former President Trump?
Well, Alvin Bragg campaigned for office by saying he was going to target Donald Trump. And then in office, he designed a statute, a way to prosecute Donald Trump that was entirely novel. And then, of course, people found him guilty of the law that was, frankly, designed to make him guilty. But, you know, there are a lot of problems with how the judge conducted the case, with how Alvin Bragg conducted the case, and frankly, with even the construct of the case. I mean, it is a federal election law that's the underlying issue. And as for the business records, no one's been prosecuted for it. If you look at the elections law, no one's been able to expense paying hush money to anybody, let alone under the circumstance Donald Trump paid Stormy Daniels. So while those things normally would derail lots of campaigns, having paid hush money to somebody like Stormy Daniels, they've never been able to be expensed as a campaign expense, and they've certainly not been criminalized in a state court, no less.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the underlying issues here that took place before Donald Trump was president, that's another issue. What we're talking about here, you know, just for some of our listeners and viewers to say you're defending the president. And look, I don't defend what he did, but I am concerned about how the judicial system has been weaponized against him. But this is just the latest example. You serve on the subcommittee on the weaponization of the federal government. You've seen an abundance of examples that show how the left is using the government to intimidate and silence its opponents.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Tony, and exactly how you're talking about the crafting of a law to specifically go after one person in this case, Donald Trump. And the reality is, they're doing the same thing to people. You mentioned an abortion protester just this week. There's a 75-year-old woman praying outside of an abortion clinic in Washington, D.C. They sentenced her to 2 years in jail for a nonviolence offense of peacefully praying in front of an abortion clinic. The January 6th people, certainly there were some people who were violent, but there are people sentenced to years in jail for nonviolent offenses being present in Washington, D.C. on January 6th. And it's all designed to have a chilling effect in terms of the targeting. You mentioned before how surveillance was conducted on people. They had, you know, the financial institutions in the country collecting and sharing information with federal agencies without a warrant or subpoena on who spent money where, on what dates, and what they might have bought, including religious texts like the Bible. So this is really a political rivalry, and it's using all the tools in the arsenal in a way that shows, hey, we view that we're in a war, if you're talking about the left. And on the right, you know, we're still kind of saying, well, you know, we're going to have oversight hearings. The people are fully aware of this, of what's going on. They've been made aware of the situation. That's why their frustration's growing, because they don't see anything changing. And that's where we really do have to get after appropriations. We can't keep funding the status quo. And the reality is, our view of what should be happening does conflict with what Democrats want to do. And if we don't have a funding fight, we're really not going to see a change of direction.
So let's talk about that, Congressman Davidson, because what we're talking about here is essentially the rule of law. We cannot take a machete. This has to be a scalpel. We've got to go in and we've got to cut out and stop how government is being used against political opponents. But we can't blow up the whole system. And I'm concerned this is a very delicate process. How do we go about it and preserve the very foundation of our republic, which is the rule of law?
Yeah, I mean, so Democrats always hold hostage, well, if we're going to go along with it, or there's going to be a government shutdown, and it'll be all your fault, Republicans. And unfortunately, Republicans keep folding on that. And anyone that's been part of any business negotiation or watched one episode of a show like Pawn Stars or something knows if you're going to accept whatever offer is made, well, you're not going to get a counteroffer. And that's how Republicans go into these negotiations. The speaker said, you know, the four corners don't agree. Well, we already know that they don't agree. So the question is, are we willing to risk some disruption, not that we want it, in order to get a change to the status quo? And of course, Democrats aren't going to go along with the change. It's rigged in their favor right now. They're completely abusing all of our institutions. In the 60s, they committed to a long march through the institutions. They've marched through them, seized them, and now they're wielding them as weapons against the American people. If we don't defund those abuses and put fences around it and say none of these funds may be used to do X, Y, Z, these other funds may be only available if, you know, those kinds of conditions that are surgical, to your point, we can't get to them without the Democrats saying, oh, it's a machete. You want to shut down the whole government. The reality is we don't, but we do have to have a fight, and we're not going to get that without the fight.
So what's the time? I mean, we just finally got the appropriations bills through just a few weeks back. We're now working on appropriations for the next year. There is discussion of possibly a longer-term continuing resolution that would put the budgeting past the next election. Is that a fight that would take place at that point?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, the deadline is October 1st. Congress honors it by never hitting it. But this year, there'll be a lot of pressure for Democrats to hit it because they want one more status quo or maybe worse, you know, reforms in their direction during this, you know, presidency. And they, I think, feel that there's a real risk that they're going to lose control of every branch of government in this election. And the question for Republicans, are we going to give them one more status quo bill? Or are we going to insist on reforms this fiscal year with this majority that we have in the House right now? Just this week, we vote on the Milcon VA construction appropriations. So we're already on to the fiscal year 2025 votes. And we've got good conditions that passed the House last year. But when it came down to it, you know, we folded rather than fight back in March on an omnibus. So it was broken into two parts, but same effect. We didn't put up enough of a fight to really get major reforms. And it's like, well, are we going to kind of, quote, clear the decks? That's just what some of the big spenders want to do for Donald Trump. And in my view, that just delays things that just delays the Trump agenda by another year if they, quote, clear the decks at the end of this fiscal year. So we should be trying to get into the next early 2025 and push reforms that we can pass that are really going to change direction of the country.
So, Congressman Davidson, do you foresee that in the appropriations bills that we're going to see some of these issues addressed, understanding that that's just in the House, it still has to go to the Senate, but do you foresee that being done?
I do think in the House we'll get some of these things. It might not be everything that it's a legislative body, not a think tank, but I think it'll be a product that is going to indicate that we want to go in a different direction. And we did that reasonably well last year. We had some great amendments that would have defunded Jack Smith, for example, things like that. But the question is, are we going to actually go to the mat and fight to get them? And it might be that we just agree to a draw until like March 1st or something and resolve it. I don't know if we can get that. Democrats obviously want their own agenda and want, you know, the other $4 trillion out of the $5 trillion Build Back Better that they were asking for
right
last year. No kidding, we have different visions for where the country should go. Those aren't going to be resolved without real debates and good votes on the floor of the House.
Just 20 seconds, Congressman Davidson, since last week's conviction of Donald Trump, does that change it to create the pressure to do something?
Well, I sure hope so. I was at Cracker Barrel Friday night, and I had people coming up to me right and left saying, you guys are going to do something about this, right? They don't want a hearing to know what happened. They know what happened.
Yeah.
They want us to do something.
Well, and you represent a very conservative area of the country, some great patriots up there in Ohio. Congressman Warren Davidson, always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us on this Monday.
Thank you, Tony. God bless you and your viewers.
All right. Thank you. All right, folks. After the break, we're going to get a wrap up from Travis Weber on the 77th World Health Assembly that concluded over the weekend in Geneva. So don't go away. More Washington Watch straight ahead.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Stopping the WHO's global.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us on this Monday. Check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Also, be sure and download the Stand Firm app. It's an interactive, cutting-edge, next-generation digital platform. All right, so you can either go to the App Store, look up Stand Firm, download the app, or text APP to 67742. And once you download it, be sure and give it 5 stars. So that others will see it. On the final day of the 77th World Health Assembly over the weekend, members of the World Health Organization agreed on revisions to the International Health Regulations, that's the IHR, even as they failed to pass their pandemic agreement or their accord that they wanted so desperately. This was a tremendous power grab by the World Health Organization. However, It's not good news. Even though they failed to get the pandemic accord, some of these amendments to the international health regulations are quite extensive. So what does this mean for national sovereignty, for the well-being of your family, for freedom-loving people everywhere? Well, joining me now to discuss kind of the wrap-up of the 77th World Health Assembly is Travis Weber, who attended the assembly there in Geneva. He's the policy editor for the Washington Stand, as well as vice president for policy and government affairs here at the Family Research Council. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Good to be with you.
All right. So I know that the dust is still settling, but there's a lot of what I would describe as inaccurate information surrounding the final actions. I mean, it was not good, but I think we need to be very precise in how we detail what took place so that we'll know what we need to do going forward. So help us clarify what actually happened in the final hours, the 11th hour of the assembly and the amendments that were made to the international health regulations.
Yeah, so Tony, there are two things that happened in the waning hours. The assembly agreed on a pathway ahead for the pandemic agreement, even though they didn't pass or agree to any pandemic agreement text. The second thing that happened is that there were amendments agreed to by to the 2005 version of the International Health Regulations, and these amendments, the language for the amendments, passed in a final version of those by consensus meaning no state objected to their passage later on Saturday night. So throughout the week at the World Health Assembly, delegates and states were trying to come to some agreement. It actually took them longer than perhaps anticipated to agree to the amendments, and they never even got the pandemic agreement done. So what we saw is a slowing of the process, not as smooth as they'd hoped. Nevertheless, they did pass amendments, and these are amendments to the health regulations, which have been in existence since 1969, several iterations, the most recent one in 2005, that are designed to be used by nations when dealing with the spread of diseases internationally. And it's understandable. These are used in cases of yellow fever and other type of diseases that spread and have actual harmful health impact, health effect. The most recent version is dealing with the post-COVID era. So a lot of people are watching the World Health Organization post-COVID, and that's why there's a lot of scrutiny on these right now.
All right, Travis Weber, before we get into the amendments to the international health regulations, I want to go back to what you said about the treaty, the pandemic accord, which they did not get done, but they agreed to a way forward. So how is that different in terms of the way forward? How's that different than what they had going into this? They've been working on this treaty for 2 years, unable to get it accomplished. So what does that way forward look like?
Yeah, so they've been working on text to try to agree among all member states. The member states did not agree on the text. So, you know, basically what you have is the World Health Assembly saying, we're going to keep working on this thing. That's kind of what happened. Okay. And their next scheduled meeting is going to be in July. They're going to aim for it to get it done in about a year, but they're just going to keep working on it.
So you think that maybe they want to just kind of wear down the opposition, thinking that we'll just go away?
That could be part of it. That could be part of it. I mean, the pandemic agreement deals with issues that are very serious and much more ingrained in the way they would lock together member states than even the amendments to the health regulations. So this is something that really needs a serious look by anyone agreeing to it.
All right. So, Travis, you were there. You've dissected. You've come through the amendments to the international health regulations. It's very comprehensive. I mean, we're talking 62 pages. What's the practical implication for Americans with what was adopted on Saturday? And is there an opportunity to pull the plug on it still?
Yeah, the practical implication is that the Biden administration was all in trying to get this done. The United States was one of the countries that pushed to try to finalize the regulations this week. So the Biden administration is you know, really committed to what the WHO did here. So the practical impact is I think they're going to aggressively try to do everything they can to implement these. And that's going to look, further regulation and planning within the executive branch of the federal government, working with state health authorities. The new regulations call for increased coordination both within countries and between member states.
Right. And one of the things I saw in here that you pointed out was that it went from a consultation role to a basically mandating that we shall, member states shall do what the WHO puts forward.
There were several points at which language changed from the previous version of the IHRs, from less restrictive language to more restrictive language on member states. That's very important because that's just going to tighten the net, and the WHO is going to be, they're going to try to say, you have to do X, Y, Z. But it's important that member states recognize the context this was in. It's always with the cooperation of member states and their voluntary implementation of this that this will be implemented at all.
So we can get out of it if we had the right administration. They could easily pull the plug on this. But final question for you. We've got 30 seconds left. This is, as it stands, an attack on sovereignty of member states, including the United States.
You clearly are going to be bound to this by the terms of it, the way it locks member states in, the way it requires them to share resources, information, and weaves a web under the WHO. That's something we have to look at. You can see it in the text. And folks can do that on our web page with the washingtonstance.com/WHO.
All right. Travis Weber, thanks so much for your final report. I know we're going to talk more about this in the days ahead. And folks, you can find out more. Text WHO to 67742. We'll keep you updated. We're not going to let go of this. All right. Coming up next, godly masculinity. Don't go away.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
Welcome back to Washington Watch, the website, TonyPerkins.com. And again, be sure and download the Stand Firm app. It's a new digital platform, interactive. You've never seen anything like it. So go to the App Store and download the Stand Firm app or text APP, that's app, APP to 67742. And then once you've downloaded it, go ahead and give it a rating. Give it a five-star rating so others will see it. So throughout both Bible, the Bible and all of human history, we've understood that there is a difference between the sexes as created by God. That is, of course, until recently. And then we have these radical gender ideologues that are seeking to blur or even erase these distinctions, these God-given distinctions, leading to significant changes touching almost every facet of society, creating confusion and chaos. And hurt, by the way. Well, this week, Promise Keepers organization announced the launch of the Proclamation on Godly Masculinity. This proclamation establishes 10 truths regarding masculinity based on the Scripture. Now, these are the unique callings that God places on men and the ways men must step up and lead in their churches, their families, and their communities. Joining me now to discuss this is David Benham, co-founder of Benham Companies and one of the leaders who worked on drafting this proclamation. David Benham, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's nice to be with you. Thank you so much.
All right, so just happens to coincide with pride flags and rainbow flags, the proclamation recognizing that God has called men to be masculine. Why is that considered controversial in 2024?
The reason why masculinity is controversial in 2024 is because the world system has set itself against the very design and the image of God for manhood. You know, we look at what's happening in the world today, and when we look at the world system and the system of Satan and the system of the devil, he does not want men to be godly men, biblical men, to embrace masculinity as God designed it. And so what the world system has done, Tony, is it elevates perversion and greed and promiscuity and dominance and chauvinism, and then it flips it around and calls its own invention toxic. And so what we decided to do, what Promise Keepers has chosen to do, is at this moment in history, we have to define what a true biblical man is. What is manhood? What is masculinity? And one of the most important things that we're trying to do, you know, as Socrates once said, if you wish to converse with me, first define your terms.
Right.
We're trying to define, what does it mean to lead? In today's culture, leadership is often associated with dominance, or you're the one person that says that, you know, it's your way or the highway. That's not the type of leadership we're looking at, Tony. The type of leadership that we define in Scripture is the leadership of Jesus Christ, the servant leader who sacrificed himself for us, who laid his life down. And that's truly the essence of biblical masculinity, is that a man is tasked, number one, to provide and to protect, to lay his life down, to be the first line of defense. Now, thank God for all the women that are out there doing such great work. Thank God for all those moms who are out there doing wonderful things, especially in the absence of good men. But men are tasked with that responsibility. And so now, during Pride Month especially, now is a time to clearly define what a man is.
Is it the absence of masculinity that has allowed this agenda to move in?
100%. The only problem, you know, the problem today is not the presence of darkness, it's the absence of light. When God says that we are the light of the world, the church, and I want to give a Martin Luther King Jr. quote, he said, the church must be reminded that it is neither the master nor the servant of the state, rather it's the conscience of the state. Well, when the church forsakes its conscience and we don't train up men to be biblical men, to lay their lives down, and then men turn around and use the same power and strength God has given us to stand against injustice, that men are using it now to perpetrate evil, to be greedy, to be chauvinist, to dominate, and to do all kinds of evil around this world. And so in the absence of good men, evil men have risen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we find this issue with toxic masculinity and all these things that we desperately need to set straight with good male leadership.
So David Benham, you are challenging men to sign this proclamation, then live it out.
Yes, 100%. First and foremost, it starts inside. And then what happens on the inside of your own heart, especially when you get right with Jesus Christ, and you say, Lord, take all of the strength that you've given to me and the dreams and the desires and the personality, and help me as a man to use those to promote, to provide, and to protect goodness, righteousness, truth, and justice, first in my home, then in my community, and in this nation. And then from the inside, then it goes to the outside. Go to whatmakesaman.org. Whatmakesaman.org. It's spelled that simply. Even my twin brother can spell that. Whatmakesaman.org. And sign the petition, and then send it to your pastor and encourage him to sign it. We're trying to get, at a bare minimum, right out of this first week, 1,000 pastors across the country. And I believe we're going to get several thousand pastors, but we're going to get millions of people that are going to sign this, and that clearly defines what makes a man. And when you have your children, they actually read this and see it, everything's going to change.
All right, whatmakesaman.org. Go there and get it and sign it. And by the way, speaking of masculinity, David, when are you going to come do a workout with me?
I'm too afraid. You're too strong and you wake up way too early.
All right. David Benham, great to see you. Tell your other brother I said hello.
Yeah, you got it. Thanks, Tony. God bless you.
All right, folks, after the break, how should Christians respond to the turmoil created by the weaponizing of government? That's next.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Again, download the Stand Firm app. Go to the App Store or text app, APP, to 67742. Our word for today comes from 2 Samuel chapter 11, the well-known encounter of David and Bathsheba. Then it happened one evening that David arose from his bed and walked on the roof of the king's house, and from the roof he saw a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful to behold. So David sent and inquired about the woman, and someone said, "Is this not Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite?" Then David sent messengers and took her, and she came to him, and he lay with her. Now notice the progression of David's sin. He saw the lust of the eyes, he sought, he pursued his lust, he sinned, he yielded to his lust. You see, David kindled a fire, fed the fire, and then was consumed by the fire. And there's much more to the tragic story of David and Bathsheba, but it tells us we must be on guard as to what we are watching, listening to, meditating upon, and acting upon. To join us in our journey through the Bible, text Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742. Over the last few years, the weaponization of the government and the courts to intimidate and silence opponents has become unnerving. It smells of a banana republic, and it puts our republic on slippery footing. The politically motivated prosecution of former President Donald Trump could be the straw that breaks the camel's back for many. But it is not by any means the only example. We have parents being targeted by the Department of Justice for speaking out against leftist indoctrination in public schools funded with their tax dollars. We have the FBI monitoring Catholic churches, doing so undercover. We have military-style raids of homes of nonviolent pro-life protesters. We have the federal government colluding with banking institutions to surveil the private financial data of citizens and organizations like the Family Research Council, and the list goes on. Now, this weekend, I was talking to the House Speaker, Mike Johnson, about the calls from some conservatives to fight fire with fire. If the left is lawless, we must do the same to counter them. Of course, he and I both disagree. To do so would be to ensure the demise of our republic. So how should we, as Christians, as followers of Christ, respond? Joining me now to discuss this and more is Dr. Albert Mohler, president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. He's the author of many books, including Tell Me the Stories of Jesus, The Explosive Power of Jesus' Parables. Dr. Mohler, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to have you on the program.
Thank you, Tony. Always good to be with you.
Now, you've said that the prosecution of former President Trump was blatantly political and timed to inflict maximum political damage, just as the 2024 presidential campaign was hitting high gear. So how do we respond with that knowledge and understanding?
Well, you know, I think it is just important for us to put this into context. We're here talking about events that, in terms of the court's interest, were dated back to 2016. This is 2024. And we're talking about a case that was described by the previous district attorney as a zombie case. And we're talking about a current district attorney who ran for office, vowing to do whatever he could do to bring action against Donald Trump. And then we have this case that was brought, and even on the left, they admit this was a novel legal theory. In other words, no one's ever been prosecuted on these grounds before. And then you have the media talking about this case as a hush money case. And frankly, there are huge moral issues. You and I would agree with that are involved there. But that's not what the case is about when it comes to the law. When it comes to the law, I don't think the average American could even explain what it is that this court has now convicted Donald Trump of doing. And that's why I think this is a, as you say, it's a constitutional crisis for the United States. And I think we as Christians have to think through these issues and understand we have an absolute interest in and commitment to the rule of law. That means we call it out when it fails.
Right. And I think, in part, their hope was based upon the underlying issue here that you said really has nothing to do with the application of the law in this case, the hush money that was paid for an improper relationship, which we would completely call out and have.
Yes.
This was before he was president. We're now into the 2024 election cycle, and this clearly was designed, I think, from the start to suppress voters because they're, you know, all this stuff is dredged up. But beyond that, beyond putting aside the president, the election of 2024, we're talking about the rule of law. This is how our republic works. And some Christians might see this and say, and conservatives are saying this. I mean, I'm hearing it. You know, eye for eye, a tooth for a tooth. You know, if they're going to be lawless, we've got to be lawless. That is exactly what those who hate this country would want, because that would tear it down.
No, absolutely. Your point's emphatically true. And we need to say it again. Our job is to do what's right and to uphold what is righteous and just. And, you know, one of the things that's going on here, this lawfare is going to be very tempting. You know, there never has been a situation in which you've had a former president of the United States brought up on state criminal charges in a novel prosecutorial theory. I can't think of many things that are actually more dangerous for our republic. But the one thing that would add danger is conservatives gaining control and trying to do the same thing.
Right.
This is, it's the destruction of the rule of law. We have to be the people who uphold the rule of law.
And it's going to be a fight. We happen to be in our reading through the Bible, reading through David and Saul. And in fact, I was just reading this morning, reminded of 1 Samuel chapter 24, where David is in a cave and his men, and Saul comes in, and Saul is pursuing David to kill him unjustly, and men encourage him, "Well, the Lord has delivered him into your hand, and you go ahead and kill him, and we'll take care of the problem." And David says, "No," he said, "I cannot raise my hand against God's anointed, because it would be violating the law of God." And David had to trust God. Now, it took time. It took 15 years to see justice prevail, but it took time, and he had a kingdom then to inherit as king. I'm very concerned if we say, look, we got to do what they're doing, we will, in fact, see the end of our republic in our lifetime.
Well, I think in even shorter than that, Tony, to make your point. So if you think about this, how many United States presidents, say, in the last 30 years have been investigated by special counsel. And, you know, the various laws even creating the special counsel have often turned out to be unworkable. So we're like on our third theory of the case right now.
Right.
And this lawfare is going to be destructive of every administration. And so it's just going to be a matter of ruthless power. Whoever gets elected right. tries to put the previous president in prison. That's ridiculous.
Which is like a third world country.
Exactly.
And, and do not think that we can continue. And I'm not talking to you. I'm just talking, you know, in general, that we do not think that we can continue enjoying the prosperity and the peace that we've had as a country because business right. stops, the economy tanks. You know, we begin to experience all of these other issues when we do not have the framework that gives people confidence that justice will prevail in the end.
And we're living in a strange political time. We need to admit that. And quite honestly, we're dealing like on both sides of the political divide right now with unprecedented developments. The last right. thing we need right now is to give ourselves to a pattern of revenge by lawfare. And I can only hope that the former president, having experienced this, is going to understand the danger of this kind of thing now set unloose,
okay.
Set loose, and not do it.
So, Dr. Mohler, I think we've analyzed the challenge, the risk before us. Let's talk about the way forward. As believers, and put everybody else aside, because I do believe as followers of Christ, we're to bring solutions to the table. I believe we're the ones that have clear vision, and we can help move the nation forward. So let me throw the first one out there that I think we need to start with is we need to be praying yeah. for that insight and that understanding to see what is happening here.
That's absolutely right, because we're not just looking at a presidential election, as if you could say that. We're looking at tectonic shifts in the entire culture and, frankly, on the global picture. And so I think Christians need to be very prayerful, as you say, and very concerned about discerning how the Lord would have us to act as Christians, as American citizens, and as those who, you know, I speak as a grandfather, have grave, grave concerns about the society that successive generations will inherit.
This is not a time to back up or to, you know, go into a cave and hide. I think this is a time where, with great clarity, not with anxiety, because the Scripture makes very clear, we're not to be anxious about anything, but with prayer and supplication right. and thanksgiving, let our requests be made known unto God. And then I believe take our action, which will be level-headed, clear in focus. And that means we need to be involved. We need to be educated, informed, but voting and supporting candidates, becoming candidates. I mean, this is a time all hands on deck.
Well, you're exactly right. All hands on deck. And frankly, all hands better be pretty well informed. They better be learning what the issues are and better be learning how the political process works. And so if we leave this to the people who want to create mayhem and want to morally transform this nation, then quite frankly, the cause is lost. There will not be an American republic in the next generation. And so we desperately need Christians to be informed, to be active. And frankly, even though we're disgusted by many of the things that are going on, there's no excuse to just withdraw from the political process. It's a mess.
Right.
The answer to that is not to withdraw, but to help clean it up.
Right. So what's the role of pastors?
Yeah. You know, I think pastors have to, first of all, just preach the word in season and out of season and help Christians to understand how that applies to the very real challenges we face. And I'll tell you right now, Tony, I think you'll agree on this. I think there are many pastors who are going to be judged because their church members don't have a clue how to think about the challenge of the transgender revolution and what's going on in terms of the assault on parental rights and the subversion of the family. I think there are many pastors whose silence on these issues is frankly a form of ministerial malpractice. The pastor's job is not to get up and hoist a partisan flag, but the pastor's job is
right.
to preach the word and to equip the people of God for faithfulness.
100% agree. We don't need to take a political perspective. We just need to preach the truth. What's happened, though, every spiritual and moral issue has become a political issue in our day, and it's being
right.
done, I think, intentionally so that pastors, Christians will back off saying, well, those are political issues. They are moral and spiritual issues.
Absolutely. And, you know, you make that point. Let's just make it emphatically. Putting your kid on a school bus is a political controversy, and frankly needs to be, thinking about the issues that are at stake. Going to the grocery store is a political issue these days. But you know what? You got to eat. And so, in other words, yes, we're in an age of raw-boned, white-knuckle political conflict, and there's just no way out of it. You know, I think one of the things that we need to say is that there's no escape from this. There's no safe place. There's no non-political, you know, escape into which you can go and say, I'm above this. No, we're in this, and we have a responsibility. We're citizens of a heavenly kingdom, yes, but we've been left for God's purposes in an earthly kingdom. We're to make a difference here as well.
Well, let's talk about those purposes, Dr. Mohler. That purpose is to make God known, to bring honor and glory to the Father. And in a time of great social and cultural upheaval, where people are looking for something to tether themselves to that is stable, we have the answer.
Absolutely. You know, and that the preaching of the gospel gives us not only the hope and the assurance of everlasting life and the forgiveness of sins, it also gives us the right temporal understanding for why we're left in this world right now and what our responsibility is. You know, you and I and other believers, we're not trying to get everything we have to get out of life from this life. That's why we are promised all things to God's glory in the life to come. But you know what? In this life, we're left here for a stewardship and for a purpose. And, you know, everything we can pluck from disaster, every family we can keep from breaking up, every moral trend going downward that we can help to stop, that's a good thing for the glory of God. And so the gospel is the power of salvation, but it also creates gospel people who are supposed to make a difference in the world.
Right. And Jesus, as he was talking to his disciples there toward the end, warning them of the things that were coming, he said, you know what, I've told you all of these things so that you won't lose your peace and you won't lose hope. And so even in the midst of what I would argue some challenging times that are going to probably become more challenging, we can enter into this time with confidence, with peace, and even joy. Jesus spoke about that.
That's right.
That our joy would be preserved because our eyes are focused on him and our focus is also on the mission that he's given to us.
Yeah, you know, that's such an important point, Tony. I think many of us who contend for the family, we better make really clear that we find such great joy in our families. Those of us who contend for marriage as the union of a man and a woman, better make clear we find such joy in God's plan for marriage. And even in the political battles to which we're called, you know, we're the people who are not to lose our joy because it's Christ's command that we not lose our joy. And I remember sometimes that when I'm dealing with some of these things, I need to tell my face that I need to reflect Christian joy. And that's a good thing for us to think about from time to time.
It is.
Not just getting angry, but being fully active and doing so in the joy of Christ.
Well, I like the way you put it, that the Lord commanded us to be joyful. And so I'm going to take that command and work on that one. Dr. Albert Mohler, always great to see you. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Stay in the battle, Tony. Thank you.
All right. Folks, this is why the Lord has us here, to make a difference for his kingdom, to bring glory to his name. If you know him, walk with him and bring glory to him. We're out of time for today, but until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything that you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.